me, Anna DeBlantis. Ro is off today. We're not sure if it's like the blue flu. We think it's for real, but Ro will likely be back tomorrow. And we've got a lot to get to here because there's a lot going on in the world, frankly. One of the issues that one of the things you might have seen this week, which raised a lot of eyebrows because it was unprecedented, a massive apology from the International Association of Chiefs of Police. They put out this apology to say they're sorry for the historical mistreatment, prior past wrongs in minority communities specifically. So the nation's largest police association, rather, also joining hands with this organization to say, hey, we have messed up and we are part of the reason for why we are where we are today, part of the reason why there is such a divide and a lack of trust of police officers. And our crime contributor, I think we can call him, Sergeant Pete, who's frequently on our show talking about issues of crime in Chicago, 38 years a Chicago police officer, served on the streets in gang, dealing with gang issues, violence issues, all the kinds of things police officers deal with every day in the city, but also then went on to work in internal affairs where you were investigating the wrongdoing of police officers. So I think you offer such a unique perspective here, Pete, which is why I'm happy you're here to weigh in on this. But I know this is on the tail of your Facebook post that got a staggering nearly 300,000 views since you posted it a few days ago. You didn't like this apology. You thought this was wrong. And I want to hear why.
The president of the International Chiefs of Police is a chief from Massachusetts. How he has the nerve to speak for all the policemen that work in this country is beyond me. I don't think that he took a poll of all the police officers that work in these cities and on these streets and asked them what they thought. He also neglected to say that murders of policemen are up 55% this year. Mm-hmm. Our apologies coming for that. To go further back, am I held accountable for what policemen did in the 50s and 60s because I got hired in the 70s? And our kids that are on the job now that have been hired in the 90s and the 2000s, who probably, or I can't say probably, who some might have been victims of what this chief is calling the injustice to people of color. Are these policemen going to apologize for what was done to them, and who are they going to apologize to?
But don't you think on its face it does help to mend the relationship to say, hey, in the past, these things were not handled properly? And in Chicago, we have quite a few examples of them that you know better than I do because you investigated these police officers and put them away. Guys like John Burge and his torture crew at Area 5 who forced confessions and people went away to prison and served time for crimes they did not commit. We have that history as well that also creates this situation where there is a distrust, and don't you have to try to mend fences in this way as well, reach out in this way?
But see, Burge went to jail for perjury. Nothing was ever proven that Burge did or any of his associates did any beatings.
But whether police they officers, did or didn't they you didn't. All kind of know? I mean, isn't that one of the issues that you've told me about in the past where a lot of times you know who the bad actors are, and they're such a small percentage of the police department. The vast majority of those men and women, I know many of them, you know many, many more, they're doing their job, they want to come home safely, they want to help solve crimes, they want to help the community, but there's that small percentage of guys who are bad actors who haven't seemed to have been rooted out of our police department in an effective way in the past.
But your police department is going to reflect your society. So if a percentage of your society is bad, a percentage of your police officers are going to be bad. And it's a very small percentage. When I worked in the Internal Affairs Division, we had Finnegan, we had Majanowski, we had Corey Flagg, Broderick Jones, we had Pac-Man. We had blacks and whites that we put in prison for doing home invasions and robberies and taking advantage of people that lived in the inner city, but they were black guys and white guys that were doing this. So I can't see the police officers, individual police officers, taking upon themselves the burden of saying, I'm sorry for what my predecessors did. Am I supposed to expect an apology from all the Puerto Ricans in this city because my dad was murdered by a Puerto Rican? I mean, it's a different analogy, but, you know, I respect Lori Lightfoot, and she echoed this police chief's ideas also.
She's the former head of the board that oversaw.
Right, she was also the former head of OPS, and I've known her for quite a long time, and she's a very bright, very intelligent girl, just as you are. You know, Rhodes Scholars and U.S. attorneys and all, and I'm just a street cop. But in my day, and the police, the majority, the huge majority, 99% of the policemen that I worked with, I felt were honest and were hardworking, and color made no difference to us when we were trying to stop the drugs and stop the murders and stop the violence.
Well, let me ask you about something else that's been getting a harder look that we've tried before and is now falling into favor again when it comes to community policing. There was a time in Chicago's history where we sort of moved to those bands of strategic crime fighting groups that were good at fighting gangs, like the Mobile Strike Force, and then you had SOS, and they disbanded for different reasons and not good reasons. But then we sort of said, okay, we don't need that sort of task force anymore. Should we move back to the time when police officers knew everyone in their community? They knew him by name. They became more of a friend of a neighborhood. Or does that model not even fit anymore in this situation we're dealing with now with 600 homicides?
The over six. The CAPS program has never worked in any major city. When in the 70s, we had what what we call the walk and talk program, where policemen got out of their cars and worked and walked around their neighborhoods. Where I worked was partly was my neighborhood, and I got to know pretty much everybody around my area and on my beat, and I knew who the bad guys were and I knew who the good guys were. But now we're in a time when we're so short of policemen, and the mayor says he's going to hire 900 more policemen, but 700 are going to retire, and so he's going to be below what we should have. But in some of these districts, in Inglewood at 7-Eleven, in 3 and 5 and 15, when a policeman gets in the squad car and turns on his computer and logs in, all of a sudden he has five or six jobs that he goes to. In my day, part of those jobs could have been noise. Somebody had a cat lost. Somebody had a bat in their apartment. But these guys, these kids, these men, these women are actually getting calls of murders, of robberies, rapes, sexual assaults, luring of children. So these are type one crimes that these policemen have to respond to. Mm-hmm. So you're going from job to job to job. You have a shooting, you're tied up for an hour and a half. You have a rape, a sexual assault, an abuse of a child, you're tied up for a couple of hours. And you're doing the preliminary investigation. That's not counting the time the detectives are in. So to interact with the community is really hard. But if you give them enough police officers, they can interact with the community. But it's a two-way street. The community has to help the police department. You can't tell me that people that live in these communities, I know who the bad guys are that live on my block, and I live on a nice block. But
there seems to have been a difficulty, though, to root out those guys, though. That was my point. Before we go, though, I want to ask you about use of force, which is under so much scrutiny now. There are new policies nationwide and here in Chicago being reviewed and implemented to de-escalation training with dealing with the mentally ill, to try to prevent some of these situations that can be from becoming deadly situations involving police officers and suspects in some cases. Is that going to help? Is that the right way to approach this? Will it make a difference, I think, is a better question.
Yeah, there are paradigms out there where certain levels of force and certain levels of resistance are met by certain levels. A passive resister is a guy that says, I'm not going to jail. And then you convince him to go. Then there's a guy that wants to fight you and struggle a little bit. So you have to put your hands on him and you handcuff him. The next guy is the guy that wants to physically fight with you, so now you have to physically fight and restrain him. And the top of that paradigm is the guy that pulls out, the person that pulls out a gun or a knife and threatens your life, your partner's life, or somebody else's life, where you come up on a scene and a guy's shooting at other people. At that point, you're allowed to use deadly force. Mm-hmm. And what people don't realize is a policeman, police officer has to make a decision in a matter of a split second. A police officer doesn't have the ability to stop and think and do this in slow motion. They have to think and react quickly.
Right. Important thing to remember. Pete, thank you for your thoughts. I don't know if I agree with all of them. I don't. I told you off air. We didn't get into an argument, though, so I'm happy that this was civil. But I always appreciate your perspective. So thanks for being here.
Thanks.
We have coming up here the after Violetta's traffic, the Mike Monaco, the legal analyst and expert for the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, coming up. He was representing Derek Rose and some big developments in that case, as you've been hearing Judy report. But first, let's get to traffic and Violetta Podramatic.